And Jesus has experienced for 30 years the world that we live in. And now, Jesus is finally going to enlighten us. He's going to share the knowledge of all of heaven that he's been in, and he's going to use it to help us make sense of the world that we live in here. And so, Jesus goes up on a hill, and he starts to teach the ones who have followed him. Jesus says, okay, I've experienced the life that you all lead, and I want to show you. I want to show the ones who are going to follow my leadership. I want to show you what's going on. And let me encourage you, each and every one of you, that you can have and live a successful life, a victorious life. You can live a joyous, significant life here on earth. You can feel encouraged if you look at life and what it's all about and all the situations, if you look not so much through your eyes, which just see the here and now, look through my eyes, the eyes that have seen eternity. I can help you make sense of it. Jesus starts this sermon in chapter 5 of the book of Matthew by telling us how we can have happy, successful, victorious lives. Now, the word he uses here is Makarios. This is a Greek word, Makarios, and it means, they translate blessed, blessed or blessed. And what it means is happy or fortunate or successful. And he's saying that you and I can have these Makarios, successful, blessed lives if we accept situations and look at life as God intends us to look at these situations in our lives. And so let's begin. Matthew chapter 5, I'm going to read all three verses that we're going to cover tonight, actually four verses. Matthew 5, starting at verse 3, and you'll see this word Makarios pop up quite quickly with that's translated blessed. He says this, Jesus, you're blessed, or blessed, when you're at the end of your rope. He says, with less of you, there's more of God and his rule. You know, you're blessed when you feel you've lost what's most dear to you. Only then can you be embraced by the one most dear to you. You know, you're blessed when you're content with just who you are. No more, no less. That's the moment you find yourselves proud owners of everything that can't be bought. He says, you're blessed when you've worked up a good appetite for God. He's food and drink in the best meal you'll ever eat. Those are the first four of what we call the Beatitudes. Let's look at the first one. It says what we've just read. You're blessed when you're at the end of your rope. With less of you, there is more of God and his rule. Now, you may be used to hearing this or seeing this on a plaque in the King James Version. It says, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Well, Jesus is saying this. He says, look, I have been in heaven. I have lived on this earth, and I'm telling you that the times people experience desperation and the time that people experience helplessness, you don't realize it, but those are often the times that drive them to the kingdom of God. One of my favorite movies of all times, I always forget to say it when people ask me what my favorite movie is It's a Wonderful Life. It's a Wonderful Life is an incredible story, and you can learn so much from that particular movie. In it, George Bailey has all these big plans on what he wants to do with his life. He wants to go travel the world, build bridges, become a big architect, but instead, he kind of gets shoehorned into running this building and loan. You guys know this story. He runs this building alone, wishing he was somewhere else, and always thinking that the life that he has really isn't so great. But if he can only have the life that he can't seem to get his hands on, that would be what he wants. And then because of a circumstance, a mix-up, his uncle loses money that's supposed to be deposited, thousands of dollars, $5,000 I believe it was. And George finds himself in quite a pickle. He's in big trouble. He's running left and right trying to figure out what he should do. He even goes to the worst person in town and asks for help. And that doesn't turn out well. And George is just about ready to end it all. He winds up in a place called Martini's Bar, and he's there, and he is at the end of his rope, as we've read. It's here that George, in the movie, finally turns to God. And I find that incredible. That's where he finally bows his head and prays. Being at the end of your rope is often what God uses to get us to connect with him. God hangs out at the bottom of the barrel. God hangs out where you and I wind up when we've messed up terribly. When we've blown it all, and we wind up down on our luck, God's there. That's where he always hangs out. And Jesus is saying to us here in this beatitude that it's at the bottom of the barrel when our spirit has been broken, it's then that we finally look to the side and see Jesus standing there. And it's only because of those circumstances of being at the end of your rope that you turn to Jesus and say, "Help me." Jesus says, where I come from, what I've seen, that's a good thing. In fact, in heaven, we consider that the most fortunate moment of your life. You need to look at things differently, Jesus is saying. And don't just look at the here and now. Look at it through my eyes. Now, I don't know where you're at tonight. Whether you're at the end of your rope, or whether you're heading towards the bottom of the barrel, or whether you're heading up, but it's something we need to always know and remember. Because if you are at the bottom of your barrel, if you are at wit's end, Jesus is standing right next to you. He's just waiting for you to turn to him and acknowledge him. You don't got to be eloquent. You don't got to be anything special in your wording. A simple, "Help me." He responds quite well, "Oh, help me." Doesn't he, Mr. Dean? Very, very well. Verse 4, Jesus says about how to live happy, successful, fortunate lives is this. He says, "You're blessed when you feel you've lost what is most dear to you. Only then can you be embraced by the one most dear to you." Another translation puts it this way. "Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted." You see, gang, God uses pain in our lives to move us. Not just to move our emotions, but to move us in our actions, to move us in our beliefs and our faith. In fact, pain and loss and suffering, which seem like the ultimate negative, in the here and now, they are. But if we're looking through Jesus' eyes that look through eternity, he realizes that pain and loss and suffering are really the momentum you need, the stimulus, the trigger to change your future, to change the course you're on. That's exactly what David does. Jesus lived in the same skin that you and I live in. He breathed the same air that we breathe, and he felt the same pains and the same losses that we feel. Our pain, our grief, designed to move us up into something else. Now, depression, that's where grief gets stuck, and it doesn't move us anywhere. Jesus is saying that we can live successful, joyful, overcoming lives and find comfort by allowing God to carry us out of our grief and place us in the spot where he wants us. Now, my guess is that David in the drama, David's not done with Africa. My guess is that God has used that pain, that grief, to lead David to his destiny, to lead David to a place of significance for this point in his life. Now, I know there are people, friends of mine, who are hurting. And Jesus tells us, there is good in the bad. I have seen the future. And God knows what he's doing. God never says, oops, I missed that one. We can follow God closely through those times. Because the comfort that we seek is found only in the one who leads us with the knowledge of what has been and the knowledge of what lies ahead. Earthly eyes, they see only the here and the now. Jesus says, I've seen eternity. I've seen it all. And you can trust in God. Verse 5, the next beatitude. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. I love the way the Message translates this. It says this. It says, you're blessed when you're content with just who you are. No more and no less. That's the moment you find yourselves proud owners of everything that can't be bought. I was on, back at the church where I taught the first time, I was on an elder board. And that elder board put me on a search committee. We were looking for a new youth pastor at the time. It was a large church. And we were looking for a pastor, so we had sent out all kinds of feelers looking for people. And this one guy in particular stood out to us, and he was down in Kentucky. And we asked for him to come up, and we flew him up and really wanted to hear what this man had done in his youth ministry as a youth pastor. And I knew a little bit of the background of his story because I had been on that searching committee. So when he got there, I asked him a question in front of everyone. I said, we've heard about this ministry that you started called Rocket Town. Could you tell us about Rocket Town and fill us in? He said, oh, yeah, I would love to tell you about Rocket Town. And youth pastors are usually all full of energy like that. So he says, I'll tell you all about Rocket Town. He says, well, see, a bunch of us, we were kind of sitting around, and we came up with this idea that we should have this Friday night event where we could bring the kids in and we could teach them, but we would do it in a real exciting way, gigantic games, and then we would have a big band there every night, and then we would go out and we would actually go meet with the kids personally during the week and go on to the kids' turf, actually go right into their rooms and say, oh, this is cool, this is where you live, this is your turf, and we're sitting here all taking this all in. And he told us how Rocket Town had grown and had just seen miraculous things take place. And the whole time he told that story, I sat there realizing not once in his entire story had he used the word I. Not once. Everything in his entire story was we, us, the team, a bunch of us. What he didn't realize was that I knew his story, because I knew the girl who was his sister, who told me how Rocket Town took place. Now, he's the brains. He was the one. He created it all himself and joined other, had people come along, but it's him. But he would never say that, as he proved that day at that interview process. Well, he left, and I led the charge to, this is our guy. That's the kind of heart we want. And we offered him quite a package. I said, all right, let's get him then. Let's get him in here. This is our boy. So we sent him a very sizable offer. And it didn't take long for the response to come back. A very humble and meek, no thank you. He was staying put. That's the last I've heard of him. But he stayed with me somehow. Because you see, this guy was content with who he was. He didn't long to make us on the search committee or the elder team. He didn't long to make us think he was anything great. He was content that he had been part of creating something great for God. And he was allowing God to hand out the accolades when God saw fit. I never forgot that guy's humility and how it led him to inherit a very healthy job offer from us. But you know, Jesus tells us in this beatitude, that's how God works. We don't need need to blow our own horns when we've done something great. We will inherit nothing for that. There's no promise for that, blowing your own horn. But if we quietly do what God has called us to do, if we keep what we've done to ourselves, God will reward us. In fact, Jesus says, we will inherit the earth. My thoughts on building a team of humble, meek people have become more solidified over the past 10 years than they ever have. I have found that the best servants of God simply ask, can I do anything to help? What do you need? I have found that the best leaders are the ones who have a healthy doubt in themselves that they can lead anything at all. I found that the best leaders possess no personal agendas. They have no point to prove about who they are or point to prove to themselves. They simply live, as Jesus said, content with just who they are, no more and no less. And they are the ones, Jesus says, that will be blessed, that will find joy, that will find success, and find fulfillment. Verse 6, you're blessed when you've worked up a good appetite for God. You see, He is food and drink and the best meal you'll ever eat. Maybe you've heard it this way. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Now that word, righteousness, I know that gets me too. That's a very churchy word, isn't it? We don't use that word much, righteous, do we? Maybe in the 60s, 70s. We used it as slang, but only about 10 of us in the room would understand the 60s. The rest of you are younger than that. All right. Well, the word righteous means always doing things right. You're righteous if you always do things right. And always doing things right isn't easy. We tend to like to do the right thing after someone else has done the right thing to us. But Jesus is teaching us that doing the right thing will be what fills our souls, that feeds us. Doing the right thing is what will lead us to eternal success. It will lead us to inner joy and the life that God promised. You know, J.A. Larson, she wrote a story about this very concept. It's a story that J.A. Larson wrote about a couple named Larry and Joanne. And you know, Larry and Joanne, they were your typical, everyday, normal couple. And Larry and Joanne, they had their squabbles, just like every couple has. And they got along okay as a group, J.A. Larson writes, the two of them, as a couple. She said, but then one day, something interesting happened. From out of nowhere, Larry turns to Joanne. He says, hey, you know, Joanne, he says, I have a magic chest of drawers in my room. And she looked at him like he was crazy. And he says, no, you see, Joanne, this magic chest of drawers, I don't go anywhere near it except to take stuff out. And yet somehow, every time I open it up, every week or so, it's filled with all clean clothes. I just wanted to say thank you for doing that. Well, Joanne figured something's up. Larry's after something. She said, uh-huh. Yeah, okay, magic chest of drawers. Thanks. But then the next day, as time went on, Larry came back to her again. He says, hey, you know what, Joanne, I've been doing the checkbook. She said, oh, here it comes. All right, what do you mean doing the checkbook, huh? Okay, I'm ready. Go ahead. He says, no, Joanne, I'll tell you. I was looking at this, and of all the checks that you wrote, you recorded 15 out of 25 perfect. Thank you. That's pretty good. Thanks for doing that, because I know that's something that you don't really like to do. She said, man, Larry's losing his mind. There must be a catch, and I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. But you know what? It didn't. As time went on, Larry was sitting at a dinner table one day. He said, "Hey, Joanne." She said, "Oh, here it comes." He said, "You know what? I figured out that over 18 years of marriage, you have cooked 14,000 meals for us, and I consider every one of those a gourmet meal. Right, kids? And we just want to say wholeheartedly, thank you." As the kids kind of just all stared at Larry. Joanne said, well, thank you for saying that. I appreciate that. Week later, Joanne's daughter, oldest daughter, came running down the stairs and said, "Dad's flipped his wig." She said, "What's up? What's up?" And Joanne is getting the story from the daughter. She says, "Mom, I just came past Dad's room, and as you can see how I'm dressed, he said to me, 'Oh, by the way, you look very nice today.'" And she says, "Now, I know I got too much makeup on, and I know he doesn't like this skirt." She says, "But that's what he told me." And Joanne said, "Really? That's what he told me, Mom." "It's okay. Just roll with it, honey." But then the piece de resistance came a couple weeks later when on a Saturday morning, Larry went to the kitchen, and there was Joanne doing the dishes, and he put his arm around her and said, "I'm not playing golf today. I'm staying home. I'm doing the dishes, and I'm going to do some things around the house you wanted to get done. And by the way, here is $50. I would like you to go to the mall, get a manicure, get whatever you want, but take the day off." She said, "You're kidding." I said, "Nope. Go. Have a good time. Because you're awesome. You've been doing a great job, and I love you. Go." She stopped and said, "Thank you. I'm going to do just that." And she left. You know, J.A. Larson writes that the reason for Larry's change has remained a mystery throughout time. She says that no one has ever been told, and Larry has never revealed, what caused his change. She says, but he has stuck with it. She says, and as it went on, Joanne started to change. And all of a sudden, her compliments towards Larry started coming. Her love towards him, her appreciation. J.A. Larson says, it will probably never be known what sparked the change in Larry. She writes, but it is a change, however, that I am most grateful for. For I am Joanne. Doing the right thing isn't always the first thing on our minds. The first thing on our minds is, I'll do it for you if I know you'd do it for me. Instead of, I'll do it for you. And that's what God calls us to do. He even tells us we'll be happy and fortunate and live a full life if we live the Larry attitude. Just do the right thing. Live righteously. Hunger for that, actually. Don't do it grudgingly. Want to be that way. And you will find the full life. Jesus is giving these four instructions. And he's saying, I know that this might look a little crazy down here. I've lived 30 years here. I know what it's like. So I'm going to let you in on some secrets. And he shares those first four. Be happy. You will be happy by doing these things. We can too. The rules haven't changed. Jesus left this message, put it on paper for us so that we would have it today. God made sure it was recorded. Now maybe you're at the end of your rope today. Maybe you're grieving and mourning over a loss. Maybe you're at a point where you just need to accept who you are, who God made you, and live with that attitude. Or maybe you're sitting here tonight saying, I need to start doing the right thing. 2009 is a great place to start. And tonight is a good place to begin. God has a life waiting for us to embrace. But the way to joy and the way to success is a lot more complicated than you and I might think it is. Jesus says, I've seen it all. You can do this. I'll give you the outcome. You just need to follow me. And I pray that that's what Westbridge would do.
as we start into a new year, that we would do the right thing and live the way God has called us to live. Would you bow your heads with me? Lord, I thank you that we can come together tonight, that we can look at the sermon that you preached 2,000 years ago and find amazing truth in it. Lord, you know where each of our hearts are at tonight. You know what each of us need. Lord, we've only looked at half of what you've told us is how to live a life of fulfillment, a life where we live fortunate and live with joy in our hearts through all kinds of situations that don't look like they could bring happiness or joy. I pray, Lord, that as we continue to get closer to you, as we open our hearts to you, that we would become more of who you've called us to be, and that we would see the life that you've put aside for each of us to live, that we would see that come to fulfillment in our lives. Lord, be with us as we head out of this place, as we head into the weekdays. Keep us strong and help us to remember that we need to not just see the here and now, but to see what you've shown us and what you've brought from the other side. We leave ourselves in your hands. Amen. I encourage you to be with us next.